All right, we're going to continue chatting with Stephen LaChance about his paranormal work, and we're going to take your phone calls too and your stories next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Stephen LaChance with us. Stephen, before we take calls, let's go back to the fabulous Fox Theater in St. Louis then, where you kind of heard some kind of entity up there whistling along and having fun. What else is going on there?
Well, you know, what's interesting is we... one of the employees had talked about they had taken a picture at one point and got a picture of somebody sitting in the seats in the left orchestra section, the floor section on at the Fox. We actually got a picture of somebody sitting in the seats. we had our camera set up, there, and actually there it is. It's in about the same spot that the employee got their picture. And there's somebody sitting in the seats. It's a white figure. In her picture when she got it, which obviously it's hers and I can't show anybody, but I can tell you about it. It's a dark shadow, but the one we caught was more of a white thing, and kind of interesting. So actually, too, the bathroom on the orchestra level, the female bathroom. Now, when I say bathroom, we're talking the Fox Theater's bathrooms are amazing places. You know, they really, really are. They have the men's bathroom is a fireplace in it. The woman's bathroom, you know, a lot of the EVP, a lot of ghost box sessions, that sort of thing. We got a lot of opera music you'll hear in there, like it's replaying shows from past times. There is different the projection booth. There's a haunting up in the projection booth there.
Well, did anybody die in that theater?
There has been people that died in the theater throughout the years. The guy that the projection booth, they believe, now when you talk to the Fox about it, they believe he wasn't paying attention to what he was doing up there. And a dancer got hurt, seriously hurt on stage, because he wasn't where he needed to be with the spotlight. And they believe that's who's haunting up in the booth there. There's different, you know, you got to think about it this way. That theater is a place where people go, and those are special moments. And those special moments just somehow, they just stick, you know. Stan the Cam, we believe, is also probably visits there occasionally. We have some evidence that precludes that could very possibly be. And he was the one who, obviously, the great Stan Kahn played the organ at the Fox.
No, he played there forever.
Yeah, absolutely. So if he's going to be anywhere, that's where he's going to be. But the thing is, and I know that as the investigation went on, I was talking to someone from there, and they said, what kind of haunting is it? And it's like, this is a good haunting. I mean, there's nothing bad here. Everything that you come across there is very positive, and it's very... got a good feel to it. I have nothing bad to say about it. It's scary. It's not really a scary place, unless you're there in the middle of the night alone and you hear the whistling and the walking and the jingling.
Right, right. Other than that, it's a pretty gorgeous theater.
Yes, it's absolutely, absolutely astounding. I was actually above the stage, you know, where they have this big, huge elephant, and it's very ornate. There's a walkway that goes above there around the theater in the roof on a catwalk. I was actually up on the catwalk, looking down into the theater. It was quite an experience.
Now, you've also looked at the haunted YWCA in Alton, Illinois. Why would that place be haunted? Yeah.
The funny thing about it, George, you know, we've heard about a lot of buildings, you know, Mineral Springs, all of that in Alton. But this building, people, they kept the haunting quiet for a long time. There's been different things that have happened. There was a construction accident in the 30s when they were renovating the building that happened. A lot of the stairs that are built outside are actually stone that was taken from the prison and brought there. The thing is nobody talked about this place ever before, and it's probably this. What's interesting about it is it's just as haunted as any other building in Alton. I'll have to show you a picture sometime I took just recently. I was sitting in the lobby, and you'll sit there alone, and crazy ghost guys, we take pictures out of the midair, guys. So I take a picture. It was, you know, a week later I get at home and I'm looking. I have time to sit down and look through things, and I have a shadow figure going across the lobby that I took. That is pretty amazing. It's an amazing building. There's a lot of stories. There's the basement. There was a story of they believe that there's the ghost of a runaway slave down there. But if anybody knows the history of Alton, there's a lot of history there as far as the Underground Railroad goes and the places that that they would hide a lot. And there was even places in Alton, unfortunately, where they would capture him and sell him back into slavery. But this is one of those cases, and they believe that he actually died down in the basement of this building hiding from recapture. So there you go. And then there's the swimming pool area. There's a belief that someone had drowned in that area as well. I mean, so again, it's another one of these buildings where you have a lot of traffic, a lot of people coming in and out for a long, long period of time, and stuff happens over the years.
Sure does. Let's go to the phones now. East of the Rockies, Brian in Indianapolis, Indiana. Brian, get us started. Go ahead.
Hey, George and Stephen, good evening, or good morning.
Hi, Brian.
Good morning.
Hey, listen, good show. Good last couple shows over the last couple days, George. But I want to be real quick because I know you got a lot of callers. A couple of things. I Googled up this John T. Crow that you was talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. He was with the Union Army, correct?
That's correct, sir.
Okay, and that kind of, and he had slaves, so that kind of shoots the holes in the old slavery thing about how the Union soldiers and officers
And you, interesting enough, the slaves were never in his name. The slaves were in his wife's name, Minerva Breckenridge Crow. They were from the Breckenridges from Kentucky, so that's where the slaves came from.
Okay. Hey, listen, I was in Gettysburg, and I'll get to my question, but we were behind the Confederate lines, and there was a story of they hung three deserters before the Battle of Gettysburg to keep the Confederate soldiers from deserting. But we went to the covered bridge where they were by where they were hung, and the wife and I took some pictures of the bridge and stuff. And out of the 8 or 10 pictures that we took, three of them had like mists around me, because when we showed up, we said, hey, we want some proof that this is a haunted area about these three Confederates that they hung. And sure enough, we got it on two different pictures of mist around me, because I was the one that said it. But anyway, my question is, goes back to your dreams about that you were having with the man in the shower down the basement that was rinsing off the blood. Mm-hmm. How did them dreams stop, or how did you get them to stop?
Well, it's interesting. They stopped the moment that I stepped back into the house, is, you know, because I went back in 2004 to help that other family. It did help myself, too, I mean, because we were both being affected. But when I stepped back in the house in 2004, that's when the dream stopped, that particular dream. I don't know why it stopped then. Maybe it was the coming of full circle and I needed to go back, but that's how it stopped.
Aren't you glad?
I'm really glad, George. I don't think I would be a very sane person. I mean, definitely sleep deprived.
Yeah, for sure. Are you still investigating, Stephen, private haunting cases?
Yes, sir, I do. And, you know, that's a very important part of what I do, because the thing is people relate to me a lot better and a lot differently than they would relate to the regular investigator, especially when it comes to coming to someone and saying, I'm living through something, I'm living through a haunting. I'm almost like a touchstone for them, and so it's very easy for them to open up. And, you know, let's face it, I mean, anybody that's going through it, the first question they're going to have and the first thing they want to be sure of is that you're not going to think they're crazy. And so I guess because knowing what I've lived through and stuff, they know I'm not going to, you know, I'm probably crazier than they are. So
let's go next to Jeff in Altaloma, California. Jeffrey, you're on with Stephen LaChance on Coast to Coast.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi there.
I've recently ran across a book that Stephen might find of interest as a St. Louis historian. It's called Under the Influence by Peter Herron and Terry Gainey.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the Bush family, and they mention the Limps and the haunted Limp Mansion in the book itself. My question is, August A. Bush, the second generation who ran the brewery, He committed suicide at Grant's Farm in the building they call the castle. Is there any mention of haunting in that building?
No, but I just stumbled across the haunting that has a Bush background in the suicide, which is Anna Bush, which was the daughter of Adolphus Bush. She committed suicide in a restaurant that is run now that the Bushes used to run. It's a place called the Feasting Fox. There was an apartment above it, and she committed suicide there. It's in my neighborhood, by the way. And they say that that place is very haunted. I haven't been in there yet. I'm going to be in there within the week, so that's why I can tell you about it. But, you know, there's a lot of stories around the Bushes, too. Yes, you're right. But that's the suicide story I have for you.
What's going on here with beer barons here and suicides, for crying out loud?
Well, you know what? Think about it. Could it be the same thing that the Winchester family made because it had to deal with the curse because of the selling of the gun? Maybe it's the selling of the alcohol for alcoholism that is cursing them. I don't know. That's a stretch, but there you go.
He was 68 when he committed suicide. Amazing.
Well, I'm going to have to look into that one. I haven't heard anything about it as far as
he was sick. He was very sick and stuff, and he just kind of did himself in.
Well, Anna, and we know Anna Bush did herself in, and the reason she did it was unrequited love. There you go. It's a love story.
Okay, let's go to Scott in Waterloo, Illinois, first time caller. Scotty, go ahead.
Hi, George and Steve. Great show. It feels like a local show because I'm right across the river.
That's right. Exactly.
I was wondering if you had investigated Fort the Charters down by Prairie de Rocher, Illinois. It's in an old French fort.
Yes, I have. And the interesting thing about that is I have my family history. If you go into my ancestral history, that's where my family, LaChance, obviously, right, the last name, they came from when they came from down from Canada. They actually came to the fort there. I was just there this past summer and took a lot of photos and stuff there. Very interesting place. Do you know where I thought that felt the most haunted in there? And I'm going to ask you what you think, because obviously you've been there. I thought the chapel. The chapel really kind of struck me.
How come?
I don't know. It's just I just got a really, really that feeling. I can't explain it. You after you've experienced enough hauntings, you pretty much know when you're around something. You know, I get a tightness in my neck, and it's almost, I don't think I'm psychic or anything like that. I think it's just from exposure, you know, knowing what it feels like. I got that sort of feeling when I walked into the chapel. And, you know, and what's interesting about that is, you know, my family, you know, we're talking great-great-great-great-grandfather, you know, worshipped in that chapel, which is kind of interesting. So maybe that's why. Maybe I was connecting into that.
What do you think these things are, these entities? Why do they hang around?
Well, you know, I wrote a whole book on that called Crazy George. the thing is you see, I'm not finding a whole lot of happy there. You know, when you do the EVPs, I mean, you go out and you listen to some of the EVPs and you go listen to some of the things that people are getting. There's a lot of help me, save me, sad things going on there. You know, I think, you know, what if it's this way? And I made this, it's a theory. What if it, you know, what if purgatory in hell, in essence, is a self-inflicted thing, and these things that we're dealing with actually have kept themselves here because they're afraid to move on into another realm? Could it be that our faith and our belief system is what actually we become our own judge in the end, and that's why these things end up in the state they are, and they end up here. Now, but then again, I look at it and you go, in children, what about children? Well, there's a lot of children ghosts. There is a lot of children ghosts. Probably more hauntings of children ghosts than anything else. And if you talk to anybody that's been through the near-death experience, they always talk about there's a period of darkness before the light, before they get to the light. So what if we're talking about children, where we're talking about children that are afraid of the dark and they never make it to the light because of their fear of the dark? So they would rather stay here, and maybe that's why we have ghost children. See, I've given it some thought.
Yeah, you sure have. John's in Bakersfield, California now. John, hi. Go ahead.
How you doing, George?
Good, John. Thank you.
Hope your family's well. Well, Stephen, how you doing, young man?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm jealous of you, fella. You got more stories and hairs on my fat head. I don't know how you get it, but, you know, I must say, it must be, do you, sir, love the Lord Jesus Christ?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Well, let me tell you, I got to tell you, it figures, George, out of the foundation of a compassion that he has as a dad, is God giving him all this employment. I remember one time I had to do a cleansing of a house, and to make a long story short, I'll try to keep it under 4 minutes. This dude played a lot of satanic music, and they asked him, when the mother, Rebecca, said, would you please come to our house and do a cleansing? I got the dad to agree. I won't mention his name. Guess what happened? After I anointed my head with oil in Jesus' name, because I'm a repentant, Jesus' name baptized, Holy Ghost-filled Christian preacher, as according to Acts 2:38 in the Bible, I anointed all the mirrors, all the doorposts, right? I went into the bedroom, and all of a sudden, you hear the banging on the closet sliding door that scared the boy. And a crimson veil fell between me as I felt hands of Jesus upon my body. And guess who walked out of that closet? Satan. Yep.
Right there. What did he look like? What did he look like?
I'll tell you what he looked like. The funny thing is he had a very protruding brow. And you remember how Bruce Lee was built without an inch of fat on his body? He was built with a perfect build, no horn, no tails, but a very spiky little backbone. And he stood about 5 foot tall and muscular. And when he hunched up on the open bedroom window just before he leaped out, he vanished. He was not allowed to look at me, but he has chameleon eyes. That means he can look left and right and behind him all at once, but he was not allowed to look directly at me. And I've seen Hatman, I've seen shadow people, and I have a question, sir. Have you ever had to deal with black-eyed children?
That's a great phenomenon, by the way. They show up at your door all the time, Stephen. Are you into that?
No, I read a lot about it. I've never dealt with black-eyed children, you know, but when I was living through the darker side of The Haunting, I was coming across, and you talk to other people that have lived through something demonic, and they'll talk about when you're in public, you will come across these people with black eyes that nobody seems to see but you.
They're very strange. They're very,
very
scary.
Strange. Yeah.
David Weatherly's done a great job on that. I mean, just a superb job. Well, Stephen, stay with us. We're going to come back with final phone calls for you in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. Stephen's website linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. He's got a couple works out there called The Uninvited, Blessed Are the Wicked. And by the way, if you need to just track us, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, if you would. And again, if you're not a Coast Insider yet, you can be. Simply go to our website, coasttocoastam.com. And don't forget to download our free apps in the iTunes stores, of course, the Apple stores, and the Android stores. We'll be back. On our next Coast to Coast program, our old friend Mark Zakri joins us, and also Billy Mumy. Both of them are very instrumental with the Twilight Zone and also Lost in Space. And they're working on a new series of movies called Space Command. So we'll talk about all of that. And then open lines on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're going to have our final phone calls here with Stephen LaChance and take your stories, of course. So let's go to Tommy in Eureka, Missouri. Tommy, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Hey there, guys. Are you there?
Good, Tommy. Turn on your radio and fire away.
All right, excellent. Yeah, you guys were talking about the zombie road in Eureka, Missouri?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so I'm actually born and raised there. And there's actually some other things you guys failed to bring up. You know, I know he went down there and saw some things in the documentary, but I've seen some things firsthand and some of my friends. One of the things we used to see back when we were young kids was back then there was a lot of drug use down there, like a lot of meth users and whatnot, and they actually turned the cross upside down on the church down there. And then they have another thing called a meth shack that they painted all black. And a lot of their houses down there, they dug up all their front yards, so it was just dirt. And they burnt all their trees. And just for some reason, they just acquired a lot of basically loopy, messed out Satan worshipers. So us as kids, we go spy. There's all kinds of things like that because apparently there's an axe murder, which a lot of people don't know. There's an axe murder at a house down there. And actually, if you drive by the house, the mailbox is still there, but it's covered in vines, and the driveway is no longer there.
Jeez, that's good. Well, Stephen, I'm sure you've seen all kinds of things with Zombie Road, huh?
Well, you know, he's right. There's a lot of reports of that kind of satanic activity and stuff down there. The police reports, when you read the police reports, I'll just give you a real quick story. There was a gentleman that fell off a bluff at Zombie Road, and when he fell off, the tree branch hit him at the chin, and it scalped his whole face off, and it hung in the tree for a good couple weeks like a mask up there because they couldn't get it down. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that happens at Zombie Road. So I'm not surprised. I mean, this is story after story like this you hear from that road.
Let's go to first-time caller Roger in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Hey, Roger, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, George, Steve?
Good, Roger. Thank you.
You know, I'm sort of new to Gettysburg. I've only been here about 25 years. So I have yet to see anything haunted. They've got all kinds of haunted tours around here and all. I'm originally from Baltimore, but I do know that supposedly Edgar Allan Poe's, he was buried in Baltimore, and there's a story about there's always a bottle of wine and a glass at his grave, and nobody's ever been able to see how it gets there. But getting back to Gettysburg, I just wanted to know, have you ever been there, and if you ever you have any firsthand accounts of any hauntings? And I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, I have been to Gettysburg. As a matter of fact, I'm coming back your way in May. So I'll be back out there in May. You know, the only thing I had happen was we were at one of the battlefields, and I heard some gunfire off in the distance. You know, I didn't see anything else or anything else more than that, other than the feeling that you get when you walk on to one of those places and how the world just seems to close down around you. I mean, it's so quiet on those battlefields that I think that's very, very striking. But, you know, the gunfire, it was definitely there, and it was definitely in that place. And that was the experience there. I didn't get any photos or anything. I know people do that quite a bit, but I'm going back in May. I'll see you all in May, and we'll see what we can get.
What has been one of the most frightening stories you've ever encountered?
Oh, the most frightening stories I've ever encountered? There was a case down in Jackson, Missouri, that was a literal poltergeist case where there was a 13-year-old girl that was an agent. That was a scary case because I got thrown against the wall there. I go back to it, George, and, you know, the scariest moment will always be my daughter screaming on the other side of that door and me not being able to get to her.
You feel hopeless and helpless.
Yeah, hopeless. Yeah. I mean, that's the scariest moment. I mean, I carried that child out in my arms that night in shock. And I can never erase that moment.
Do your children talk about those episodes anymore?
Yeah, they talk about them. I mean, they're older now. You know, they're raised. They're good kids. My daughter's very, she's very open about it. Like she'll talk about, she was saying, I know the night that you saw it the first time when you were trying to get us to leave the house with you, she goes, I knew there was something wrong because you were holding the car keys and I could see your hand shaking. I mean, there's little details that come out as they get older that's kind of interesting. They deal with it in very different ways. My daughter's very religious. My middle son is getting his doctorate in chemistry, so he's the science guy. So, you know, he'll tell you that it was gases that were causing a mass hallucination. And then, you know, that's kind of an exaggeration, but you get the idea. And then my youngest son, he's kind of more like me. He's kind of in the middle of the road. So there you go.
Let's go to Joe Tupelo, Mississippi now. Joe, it's your turn. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, George. How y'all doing?
Good, Joe. Thank you.
Okay. I grew up outside of Baltimore, Maryland, and we used to go to the tracks and walk up the tracks by river. And I think it was Mount Airy. Now, there was a monastery back there, and I just got done getting loaded. I caught the end of y'all's conversation about the priest. But a friend of mine knew it real well, and he said that that's where they sent for the priest was from that monastery in Mount Airy. And I watched a movie, and it actually says that when something happens to the first priest. Now, what he always told me is it originally started in Georgetown, right outside of D.C. Is that true?
It's true.
Okay, and did the first priest that...
Well, it was Maryland. I don't think it was actually Georgetown, but yeah, that's true.
Okay, and that the first priest that actually went to see the boy or something, I don't think he got killed right there, but something about he fell down some steps and broke his neck. I think it, he was at another, somebody else's house, but it happened shortly.
I never heard that story. I know he was a Lutheran minister, by the way. That was the first person that, dealt with the boy was a Lutheran minister. I've never heard that. It's interesting. I mean, you know, if you can find that information and, you know, let me know where to get it, I'd be appreciative because that kind of adds a little bit to the theory that we did have some priest problems here.
Right, and I mean, just how it all tied together is we were walking, we'd walked up by the monastery, and we were going through, they had like a graveyard. Now, this has been 30 years ago. From what I recall, there was about 25 to 30 graves there. And it all had like Father so-and-so. And from what I remember, they passed away, say, in the early 1900s. Mm-hmm. And this is how the story got brought up to me. And then when I watched the movie, it actually says that after something happens to the first priest, but in the movie... I can't recall what they say happened to him, but what he said the actual story was that the first priest was going down steps and another residence fell and broke his neck. But I'll try to check into it, and if I can, I'll try to get in touch with you.
Well, my website is connected to the Coast to Coast, so I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Lots of cases, Stephen, all over the place. Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing, and it's a lot of, you know, a lot of great stories, too, though. You know, we could talk hours, George. We have talked hours.
Now, you also used to do some work for a show called Supernatural, right? On the CW show?
On TV, it's the CW. They wanted to show people that we actually exist, people that do this work. And so for the fifth season, we did a documentary. I produced my own segment. For the Supernatural show, which was shown, and it ended up on the fifth season DVD set, which that thing went number one in the world, George. All of a sudden, I was getting bombarded, and I didn't know where it was coming from. The Supernatural thing's big. I mean, I didn't know because I didn't.
Oh, it is. It's huge.
It's absolutely huge. But yeah, we did this, and it showed people that. That what they were showing them wasn't too far off track, that there really are people like us out there.
Let's go to Patrick now in Columbus, Ohio. Hi, Patrick. Go ahead.
Hey, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Nice. What got you to call?
I'm sorry?
What got you to call us tonight?
I got a couple short stories real quick. When I was like 7, 8 years old, we I had 10 down in Fairmont, West Virginia. We grew back in this holler. And back in there, there's this old story about this man that killed his wife and his children and caught his old farmhouse on fire and hung himself in the tree out front, okay? And, I was back there one day with my mother and all of us. We just walked through the woods. It was just an old gravel road, dirt road, with an old railroad track, you know, coal mines and stuff back in there. And I witnessed this vision. I mean, it's just a picture, you know, it was just there. I mean, you could smell smoke burning, and as we, you know, come around the corner, you know, it was like there for a couple, I'd say 10 seconds or so, then it just went away. I mean, it scared the living daylights out of me as a child, you know? And there was also, just right down from there, there was this old campground where the coal miners stayed. And one time I was back in there walking, and I come up on these gates, you know, the entrance to this is just a big open field with buildings and everything in it, you know, and it was just beautiful as can be. And something just, like, kept drawing me towards it, you know, saying, come, you know, enjoy, whatever. My mother yelled for me to stop. I turned around and looked at her. She said, start walking backwards slowly. And I turned right back around, and it was the most dark, evil-looking area. The buildings were all collapsed, like they caught fire and burnt down and everything. And it was just crazy. And as I was growing up as a child anyway, here in Columbus, I lived in an old house that was well over 100 years old. And every Christmas Eve, there was this little girl that would appear on the front porch. And she would scream Christmas Eve night. And, I mean, it would bring you up out of bed. Not everybody heard it, but I heard it a couple of times. She's probably about 5 years old. I was probably about 12 at the time. She was on the front porch. The light got real bright. And then all of a sudden she appeared. She turned around and looked at me, wearing this beautiful little dress and everything. She goes, "Have you seen my mommy?"
Oh.
And I just freaked out. I turned around and yelled for my mother, and I turned back around. She was gone.
She was gone. So, I love that story.
Yeah, I mean, it just, shoo.
Hey, what is it, Stephen? Well, you got them. What is it about little kids that are freaky in ghost stories, Stephen?
Well, you know, the thing is that's the most unnerving thing to come across as a child ghost. And, you know, it's that helplessness. It's how do you feel about that? Are you afraid of that child, or do you feel sad, or is there this creepiness to it? You know, I remember one of the first children ghosts I came across was in a place in Eureka, Missouri, as a matter of fact, again. And it was an old place, and the ghost of the girl was in there, and I actually felt the cold little arms go around my leg and hold onto my leg like my own children used to do. And it affects, you know, that affects you like no other, and I think that's part of it. I think it's that innocence that adds that extra fear and horror to it that could happen to a child and they could be lost.
We have Matt in Memphis, Tennessee now. Matthew, go ahead.
Hey, George. Long-time listener, 15 or 16 years, finally got through.
Thank you, Matt.
Great guest. If you're ever in Memphis, I recommend the Orpheum Theater and the Mallory Neely House. They're both supposed to be haunted. Anyway, I'm more of a UFO guy. Cab driver told me about your show 16 years ago, and I'd seen a UFO as a kid, and I was hooked. But I don't usually like the paranormal shows as much, but great guest. An aspect hit me earlier tonight. I recently got into Jim Wilhelmsen and his whole thing about the spiritual battle that's going on. And I thought about it's always like in the haunted houses when people see apparitions, it's like a bad horror movie. You got the victim running away or the killer chasing them, or you got the high heels from earlier. You know, we knew whose shoes they were, the evil lady. What if, you know, when these people are killed or whatever bad thing happens, you know, what if they go to heaven and the bad people go wherever they go? And what if this is just demons, basically putting this out there, putting this energy out there, replaying it, trying to brag about their work, you know, like to make us more scared of the dark and, you know, make us question our faith when we get in a situation in a back alley or somewhere for a split second, you know? Or if they're just putting out bad energy. I'll take your answer off the air.
Okay. And that does happen, Stephen. Bad energy does occur.
Bad energy does occur, and you know, the thing is that's the thing we don't know for sure. I mean, I don't think we're ever going to have the answers until our time comes. And that's why we look into it, is to try to find the answers, you know. I kind of prescribe to the Mark Twain idea of it all. The biggest joke the devil ever played on the earth is that he doesn't exist.
That's right.
So, there you go.
It sounded like Al Pacino in that movie.
Yeah, he really.
What was the name of that movie? I forgot it.
Remember?
He was the devil. Devil's Advocate. That's it. Rick, driving in Georgia. Let's squeeze you in here, Rick. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call, George. Love the show. Been listening for years.
Okay, thank you.
Two quick things. One, I'm wondering, why is it that in all ghost stories, all the ghosts are hundreds of years old? There's never one that died, you know, 6 weeks ago or 8 weeks ago when you hear the chain from his chain wallet rattling. And then also when a few years ago, my wife and I were laying in bed about 2 o'clock in the morning, and we woke up, the entire bed was so soaked that we couldn't even flip the mattress and be dry. We had a puddle underneath the bed. and there were no pipes overhead. There was only myself and my wife and my two-year-old son in the house. And then in the morning, we ended up sleeping on the couch. And in the morning, when we went in there to clean up the mess, everything was bone dry. But the main thing I was wondering about was the question.
Well, I could take you to a place in Wilmington, California, a place called Ghost Town, where there's a lot of activity that happens from the violence and the gang violence that happened in L.A. in the late 80s and early 90s. It's not always, you know, 100-year-old ghosts, 200-year-old ghosts. There's some very current ghosts out there. And it's, you know, and I went looking for him, and if just for the reason that you said, because I said to myself too, was why are they always seem like they were 100 years ago? You know, I was just in a location recently where the whole family died 2 years ago of carbon monoxide poisoning.
Oh,
the house is very
hard. Can't get any sadder than that. Jeez.
Yeah. So it does happen. So.
Stephen, we are out of time. I want to thank you. And, you know, I'm in St. Louis. We should get together while I'm still here, huh?
Yeah, you absolutely, you know, because I'd love to meet you in person. And,
I'll track you down.
I've been a fan like everybody else, too. So.
Okay, I will do that. So be well. I'll call you in a couple days.
Okay, sounds great, my friend.
All right, Stephen LaChance, great paranormal investigator there, isn't he? For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Dave Hines, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Timothy Benall, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.